Huva paiva, minum nimenion Ellen Fanning, kintos kun kuntelit. Hello, my name is Ellen Fanning, thanks for listening. Well, that's about all the Finnish I can manage this morning, so as you are no doubt upstanding for the Finnish national anthem, yes, that's the music we're playing, I would ask you all to now salute with me Finland's education system. The stirring central idea is joyous, illiterate preschoolers. Nobody reads until they're seven, but once they do, they're world beaters. All right, you can sit down now. William Doyle is a Fulbright scholar and author, and last year he joined the faculty of the University of Eastern Finland to lecture on the schools of tomorrow, and his eight-year-old son attended a Finnish public school. He joins me now. William, hyvä huomenta.
Hyvä huomenta, and good morning to you from New York City.
William, smiling illiterate children who get a free meal at lunchtime, they aren't burdened by homework. No wonder you wanted to go back to Finland. How does the educational miracle work, please?
Well, I am a New York City dad, and I was told by a great educational authority, Howard Gardner at Harvard University, told me, quote, if you want to learn how to fix America's public schools, learn from Finland, which has the most effective schools and does much the opposite of everything we're doing in the United States. And that was a provocative idea, and the more I looked into it, the more sense it made, because in Finland, the system is run by educators, not by politicians, and that's a big difference. In the United States, and increasingly in Australia, I hear, and the UK, politicians who know nothing about education have driven it into a standardized test, ranking and sorting and stress and pressure, competitive situation. And I love competition, but it's not really working very well in education. Whereas Finland does it all upside down. Educators are in charge. They are respected, given authority, freedom, and autonomy. Children are allowed to be children, and they are encouraged to learn through play.
So I'm imagining your eight-year-old son. I'm imagining him coming from New York City. And stepping into the classroom. I guess he was seven at the time. Was there any effort made? How'd he go? Did he like it?
He liked it a lot. He and I were just talking about it. He attended two schools there. One was in the woods, practically. In fact, for their gym lesson, I asked him one day, what did you do in gym today? This is in a university town called Joensuu in rural Finland. He said, well, Dad, they sent us into the woods with a compass and a map, and they told us to find our way out of the woods. And I was...
And he returned that afternoon to tell the story.
Yeah, and basically the theory in Finland is... And by the way, I know everybody listening to this probably is thinking, well, the reason Finland gets such highest marks in the Western world on global international tests is, well, they're Finnish, and you can't do this in Australia or America or London. And I don't know about that. I think that they've discovered some fundamental childhood insights. For example, children not only learn through play best, but they also learn, Ellen, through constant physical activity. Every hour of every single school day, every child in Finland is required at the 45-minute mark of the hour to stand up, go out into the woods or the playground, and play in outdoor free play. Now, that
sounds like a hell of a lot more fun in summer than in winter in Finland, to be honest.
They do it when it's 30 below Celsius.
Wow.
when it's ice and snow, and you know, the saying is that there's no bad weather, there's only inadequate clothing. but it's an example of the common sense, practical efficiency that Finland is famous for, and it actually pays off tremendously in school. They don't waste money on low-quality standardized tests, which have taken over our education and many other nations. They don't waste money on things that don't work. And what works are great teachers given freedom and autonomy, and children who are allowed to be children, but given a rich and wide and deep curriculum. That's really what it's all about.
And see, critical to it, as you're saying there, what seems to be critical to it there, William, is trust in the teachers, you know, trust in the teachers. So you can dispense with standardized testing because you don't need to keep monitoring student standards. How did they ensure that they had a cohort of teachers who could be trusted?
Well, in stark contrast to many other Western countries, every teacher in Finland must have a master's degree in education with a specialty in research and classroom practice. There are no temps with 5-week summer training who are called teachers in Finland. This is a serious profession. They are elite teacher training schools. There are 8 of them in the country, or 11 of them in the country. And they only accept the top 10%. That's because of applicants. That's because the nation respects teachers like they do doctors, the most respected profession in the nation. And these are very formidable professionals. And one of them told me, they said, our job is to protect children from politicians.
And do the dollars reflect the respect in which they're held?
Well, interestingly, Finnish teachers get paid around the average of OECD nations. I think the real difference is the cultural respect, and they're allowed to experiment and do their best. They're not given scripts and required walking in straight lines. And
so there's flexibility in the curriculum, is what you're saying.
That's right. And also, interestingly, special education in Finland is baked right into the mainstream education to the maximum extent possible. In fact, 1/3 of all students at some point, or more than that, get special education. It's not stigmatized. It's nothing unusual. My child got special education because he didn't speak the language, so he had extra support that's built right into the building. They don't waste a lot of time on bureaucracy there, which is very, very important.
So, William, if I walked into the classroom and sat down beside your son, I'm imagining that there are children in the class with special needs who are receiving those special needs. There are average kids and there are above average kids. How are they learning together? What do I see?
Well, you're going to see more than one teacher, and the special education teacher will be doing parallel teaching in the same room off to the side. Now, the emotional atmosphere in the typical Finnish school is amazing because the teachers are very authoritative, but it's a warm, supportive, empathetic environment from day one when you go in when you're 7, which research shows is very important for future outcomes. There has to be a relationship of trust between teacher and student, and the more stress and fear of failure and fear of mistakes you introduce early on, that's a real disadvantage for a child. Children should be encouraged to make mistakes, to be free to fail and experiment, and supported when they do so.
And so if these kids are all sitting side by side learning together, and there's more than one teacher in the class, how many children are there in the class?
Well, the class size is manageable around the 20 or 25 child mark in most Finnish schools, as opposed to, you know, 30 plus here in the United States in many public schools. That makes a big difference. Everyone's on the same team there too. The parents and the schools understand that, you know, a child's work is to play and to learn through play. and that children should be allowed to be children. That's a big mistake we've made. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be disciplined and focused and, you know, learning, but that's a big mistake we've made in the United States. We seem to think that if you push academics down to the, you know, low end, they're going to learn faster and be at an advantage in the world. And I think the opposite may be true. They need to get the foundations of childhood first.
And the other key element, other than trust in teachers, highly educated teachers, seems to be equality. Kids with special needs, kids right at the other end of the spectrum, gifted and talented kids learning together. I'm wondering how much time can a teacher take in a Finnish school to help a struggling child?
You've put your finger on something critical. Teachers collaborate. It is a culture of, I'll call it radical collaboration. And that means when a child has a problem, I've seen this in action. I saw a child who had a problem, and it was like a SWAT team of a therapist, two teachers, and the principal, the head of the school, came in immediately to help that child out. It's a sort of a early warning system, and they try to fix the problems very early in the child's development rather than letting it wait, and that's one of the great strengths. So they devote the resources to help children rather than wasting it on bureaucracies, and they also, it's a great culture of teacher collaboration. I cannot stress that enough. Do you know what the most beautiful room in the schools I saw were? I mean, I saw beautiful wood shops and carpentry shops and outdoor play areas and classrooms with the latest technology. The best room, most beautiful room, was always the teacher's lounge, because the teacher's lounge is where teachers get together and talk about problems and how to help children. And I think that that's another great insight of Finnish education.
So there's no shame associated with the child who is struggling. There's also, from what you're saying, no bureaucratic overlay. Well, you know, you need to take your child to the paediatrician. He or she needs to have miles of testing. You need to demonstrate why there should be resources spent on your child. And then there are not enough resources, and so we will dispense them maybe in 12 months' time. It doesn't sound like you need to jump through any of those hoops to get help.
No, there's a lot less of them. And again, the parents trust the teachers, and it's because of the quality of the teachers. You know, in America, we like to talk about rigor. We need rigor in schools. We need standardization. Well, that's fine, but the words should be applied at the right stage. The rigor is applied at the earliest part of the pipeline in selecting great people to be teachers.
And then they get to decide how to allocate resources, is what you're saying, rather than a bureaucracy deciding how to allocate scarce resources.
Exactly. And the competition is not among schools to get ranked and sorted and punished by test data or dollars, or among children. The competition is among people to become teachers, and among teachers to compete to get the best ideas to help a child. Equality is the mantra. All children should get a great education, and it really pays. I should say that there are problems. The highest achievers tend to get bored in Finland. I've heard that over and over. That's a problem they're trying to fix. And they slipped in a recent round of international tests where they usually were beating the world. Now they're only beating the Western world. You know, some Asian countries surpass them. But it still is an astonishing system. And when you look at the fact that the homework is light and the hours of school are much less than Asia and less than the rest of the Western world, I've concluded that it truly is the most efficient or effective system. And the insights in Finland are not from because it's Finnish. It's because they're global childhood education best practices. That's the big surprise.
Just one more thing on how to teach to the whole room. In Australia, we tend to supercharge education for the brightest children. In New South Wales, where I'm standing now, there's a system of opportunity classes, but only for those with the highest IQ. There are selective high schools, but only for the brightest. Now, that may be brutal, but the argument would go, I suppose, that it's effective. It supercharges your best students.
My question to that is, and I see that argument, my question is, what's the purpose of education and how are we judging children? Are we judging them on a narrow snapshot of standardized tests or IQ, as you just mentioned? Okay, then fine. Then that's the purpose of education. But if the purpose of education is to develop true, we hear about 21st century skills from politicians all the time. But if those skills are skills that cannot be tested, like teamwork, group work, compassion, learning from others, listening to others, it's a long list of things that you'll never be able to connect to data, then maybe we should be running our classrooms differently and we shouldn't be tracking our students based on their test results. It's a very difficult paradox and challenge that Finland is grappling with, and I think all systems do, but maybe we should be measuring a child's well-being and compassion and a dozen other things other than standardized tests if we want them to really compete in the world economy, which is not going to be, I think that the future jobs are not going to be rewarding IQ alone. I think they're going to be rewarding all these soft skills that all of our schools should be building more of, collaboration and all the rest.
And just finally, there's a system of vocational education and training within the schools, as you say, baked in the same way that special education is. When you get to year 10, you can pretty much, is this right, become a motor mechanic before you leave school?
Well, that's the vocational system is extremely strong, and that there is sorting there. At the age 15, you take a test, and you might wind up in a university or you might wind up in a vocational school. The vocational schools are superb, janitorial, cleaning services, restaurant work. I taught at one of those schools, and they are government-funded. They're treated like very serious professions, and that education starts at age 15. It's a brilliant, yet another Finnish education insight, I think, that we can all learn from. No stigmatization. It's a very accepted part of the system. And anybody who wants to reform education in Australia, Singapore, the United States, or anywhere else, I suggest they consider first taking a look at Finland and seeing if there are things that you could be inspired by, because somehow that country has stumbled upon what I think are a series of global education best practices that they have never really diminished. And it's flourishing today. It's a beacon of hope, I think, for everybody who is encouraged to improve our schools around the world.
William Doyle is a Fulbright scholar and author, and last year he joined the faculty of the University of Eastern Finland to lecture on the schools of tomorrow. As you keep saying, William, this is not a Finnish thing. They're not doing this because they're Nordic people and this is what they do. I was fascinated to read that until the late 1960s, they had a pretty raggedy education system. Most kids left public school after 6 years. Some went to private schools, academic grammar schools, or so-called folk schools. And only the lucky or the privileged got a quality education. What happened in the 1960s? Who stood up and said, let's build the best education system in the world?
Well, they didn't say that. They said, interestingly enough, in America, we spend all our lives saying, let's beat the world, let's have the best schools in the world.
I mean, every second US president wants to be the education president, and every prime minister of Australia wants to be the education prime minister. But, you know, what happens?
Yeah. Let's go from number eight to number two.
That's it.
The latest fad is. There, what they did in Finland in the 70s and 80s is they said, let's create a great school for every child. Let's not focus on a global competition. Let's do it for each child and treat them individually and give them all a great choice. What resulted was, almost accidentally, to their surprise, they started beating the world in all these global tests.
But was this an economic argument? Was this a key plank in an economic recovery plan?
Yes, they thought our only chance of competing in what they then realized was going to be an information society is if we do it this way. And I think they were just 40 years ahead of the rest of the world. I think the rest of the world will catch up to this because these other reforms are really not working in many cases. All they're doing is introducing chaos into schools, stress among children, having many children hate school, you know, frustrated parents, frustrated politicians, banging their heads against the wall. And maybe we have to step back and think, why are we sending our children to school? What should the objectives be? Is the objective to beat some other country in a competition, or is the objective to give every child a great education?
But how do you do that? I mean, you know, governments come and go, and teachers are a member of a broader society. Now, there are societal views about who does well. Not everybody in Finland is blonde, blue-eyed, and Lutheran. There are immigrant children. There may not be as much of a socioeconomic difference between the top and the bottom as there is in America, but, you know, there is a difference, and there will be opinions among teachers of, you know, kids from that ethnic group, from that group of refugees, they won't do well. They won't do well. How do they overcome that?
Well, they're grappling with that now. They've got a huge immigration situation. What's interesting about Finland, though, is when you look at the last 40 years of global test results, and I think that they're just a marker. They're not the national objective of education, but they're an interesting marker of what goes on. You look at what Sweden, Norway, what their outcomes have been versus Finland. You look at the chart, and Sweden and Norway kind of go up a little, then they go down, 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 because they have low quality of teacher preparation. They have competition, you know, charter schools or academy schools, whatever you call it. And the quality gets very funky in Sweden particularly, whereas Finland goes rockets like a top to the top of the world rankings. And I had some Finnish teachers tell me confidentially, they would say, you know, in Norway or Sweden, the schools aren't that good. And the reason is anyone can become a teacher. So I think whereas, you know, in Finland, it's one of the hardest professions to get into. So a lot of it may just come down to fixing the system at the very, very front end and letting those teachers run the system. Because, Ellen, I think if you asked any Australian teacher, I'd be interested to know, but I think if you ask most Australian teachers today, where would they like to teach the most? And what country seems to have figured it out better than others or very well? Many, many of those teachers, without ever having been to Finland, would say Finland. Now, I trust their opinion more than I do a politician who has never really looked at education research or how children learn. Mm. It all comes down to loving childhood. And we all love children around the world. But I think that there's a real appreciation of childhood in Finland. And there's a very deep appreciation of it as to how children learn. And finally, a great trust of teachers as professionals and letting them run the system without being interfered with by politicians, which I think is a global problem. It's called GERM, G-E-R-M, the Global Education Reform Movement run by politicians, which a great Finnish educator named Pasi Salberg invented that.
The germs. Listen, we could talk for hours about this, and I'd be fascinated to have you back in a week or two, or maybe we'll convene a panel, because I noticed that in Finland they've decided that hang handwriting, everyone's going to use a keyboard. So we will come back and talk about this topic. Thank you for giving us a taste of Finnish schools and for your enthusiasm. And I understand your son is going back with you for one more hit of Finnish education. Is that right?
Well, at least one more hit. Yeah, we'll be going back in August, and I think he'll be going hopefully to the same country school where he enjoyed last fall semester so much.
All right. Well, teach me how to say goodbye in Finnish.
Moikka, moikka. Hei, hei, kiitos.
Moikka, moikka to you, William. Thanks for joining us.
Kiitos. Thank you.
William Doyle, Fulbright scholar and author, as you can hear, he's going back to Finland, to the University of Eastern Finland, to lecture on the schools of tomorrow with his 8-year-old son in tow. You're listening to Life Matters with me, Ellen Fanning.